on your community radio station, and time to check in with our 7:30 live feature here on WERU's Monday Morning Maine. It's R.W. Estella. Good morning, R.W.
Hey, good morning, Allison. In myth and folklore, February, the shortest month of the year, has long been considered to have the bitterest weather. February is seldom warm, is an anonymous ancient aphorism that ties easily with another for the month in, as the day lengthens, the cold strengthens, which addresses the paradox of having more daylight with less heat. The word February is derived from the Latin februm, which for the Romans meant a time of cleansing and purification prior to spring. In Welsh, February is known as Y Mis Bach, or the little month, traditionally personified in pictures, either with captions that read either a sturdy maiden with a tinge of the red hard winter apple on her hearty cheek, or an old man warming himself by the fireside. This first week of February has some notable dates as well. 2 days ago, on the 2nd, we passed the halfway mark of our old-fashioned snowy and cold winter. Does it matter whether or not the groundhog saw his shadow? It'll be about 6 weeks in any event until winter gives way to the vernal equinox. Novelist James Joyce would have had his 126th birthday on the 2nd. Yesterday, on the 3rd, 49 years ago, near Clear Lake, Iowa, rock and roll stars Buddy Holly, Richie Valens, and J.P. the Big Bopper Richardson perished in an airplane crash while the Kinks' Davy Davies was having his 12th birthday back in England. 95 years ago, the 16th Amendment to the United States Constitution was ratified on the 3rd of February. An amendment providing for a federal income tax, it was an idea that had antecedents many years before, not only in the United States, but also in Europe. Experiments on taxation of income had been tried in medieval Italy and in late Renaissance England. 20-some years before he wrote Robinson Crusoe, Daniel Defoe, in his Essay Upon Projects, was recommending an income tax, although Britain would not actually introduce such a tax as a measure until 1798, when it imposed a tax of 10% on all incomes over £200, so that it might help finance its various war activities. In 1815, Britain ended the tax, only to resume it in 1842. In the fledgling United States, too, income tax was first imposed temporarily to finance war efforts, specifically the War of 1812, and then later from 1862 to 1872 to offset costs of the Civil War. Several of the original 13 states levied income taxes since 1789. In 1894, a federal income tax law was passed by the U.S. Congress, but was subsequently declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. Since 1919, most all of the 50 states, with the exception of a few, have adopted income taxes of their own. And speaking of income, last week I wound a few tangential threads around a currently curious economic topic, the dubiously eyed and vaguely named venture touted by the president and any ready bureaucratic cheerleaders as the stimulus package. Last week I alluded to the part political cartoons have been playing in this charade, and I'd like to offer another fine example of the genre that a different cartoonist, Mike Keefe, did for one of my hometown newspapers, the Denver Post. Late this past week, Mr. Keefe drew a cartoon picturing a lean, almost austere Uncle Sam wearing a barrel, for lack of clothes, and extending an envelope to a couple, a man and a woman, husband and wife presumably, who are also each wearing a barrel, and saying to them, "I borrowed this money from China so you could spend it on imported Chinese goods in order to jumpstart the economy." Two other members of the family, a cat and a toddler, are standing nearby, each also wearing only a barrel. The envelope being extended is labeled stimulus. The couple asks, whose economy, ours or theirs? Early 20th century British novelist Samuel Butler, author of The Way of All Flesh, might well have lent his satirical tone 100 years later to a 2008 ludicrous stimulus package. In his notebooks, Butler quipped, "Life is the art of drawing sufficient conclusions from insufficient premises," tying things neatly into the phrase, "All progress is based upon a universal innate desire on the part of every organism to live beyond its income." Whether relying on the money of others can be considered a form of gambling is no doubt open to conjecture, although Charles Lindbergh, whose birthday it is today, might probably have argued that it's all a matter of degree. In 1927, at age 25, Lindbergh, already an experienced cross-country pilot, convinced a group of businessmen in St. Louis that he would be the first to fly solo, nonstop, west to east, across the Atlantic Ocean to Europe, win the $25,000 prize Raymond Ortega was offering to accomplish the feat, and as a result, rekindle the fame of the city of St. Louis. They gave him the money to have the aircraft built, naturally named the Spirit of St. Louis, and provided all the additional expenses for the trip. And, of course, their investments paid them back and the city handsomely. And Lindbergh's investment of himself secured his future in aviation for the many decades of the rest of his life. Finally, something that is and then isn't. Today is also the birthday of Clyde Tombaugh, who was born in 1906 and discovered Pluto just 24 years later on the 18th of February. Back then it was a planet, a regular planet, albeit a new one, but that was 70 years ago, long before its classification would be downsized to that of a dwarf planet. Why? Because things shrink in the cold, and it's so cold out there, so far from the sun? Colder than the days of February? That's for sure. From Orono, Maine, have a good day.